This is an MUT Radio podcast.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Program Director. To our VC and esteemed guests, it gives me great pleasure this afternoon to introduce our keynote address for this afternoon. Ladies and gentlemen, I was summoned earlier on by the keynote speaker, and he said that I must not read the entire bio, but I think it will be an injustice not to do so. So I'm going to at least give you some background. It is such an honor, ladies and gentlemen, to introduce to you Professor Sizwe Mabizela, who is the current Vice Chancellor of Rhodes University. A humble man indeed, who I honestly met for the first time face to face this morning. And just a quick highlight, ladies and gentlemen. Professor Mabizela is the Vice Chancellor of Rhodes University and a professor in mathematics. He assumed the role of Vice Chancellor in November 2014, following his tenure as a Deputy Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs from 2008 to 2014. Prior to that, he served as a Head of Department Mathematics, both Pure and Applied Maths, from 2004 to 2008. Now, if you thought that was impressive, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to refer you to our brochure where you will find the rest of Professor Mabizela's bio. With that short introduction, and before I get into trouble, I hand you over to Prof. Mabizela. Thank you, Prof.
Thank you very much, Kevin. Please just call me Sizwe. Thank you very much. Program Director and esteemed conference participants, colleagues and friends, I know that the afternoon session is always a challenging one. So if you feel like dozing off, please feel free to do so. Thank you so much for your kind invitation to participate in this conference, which is held under the theme, Bridging Knowledge Gap in Advancing the Scholarship of Engagement for Maximum Impact. Let me begin by extending our warmest congratulations to the Mangosuthu University of Technology, to my colleague and sister Vice Chancellor, Professor Sibiya, to Professor Mandlini, and the organizing committee. Your vision and hard work in convening this conference have created a platform that will undoubtedly serve as an important point of reference in shaping the future trajectory of the scholarship of engagement in our country and beyond. I should also acknowledge the outstanding team at Rhodes University, led by Ms. Dai Hornby. Their exemplary work in advancing our community engagement agenda continues to be a source of immense pride for our institution. I'm pleased that Ms. Monica Tanga is here. She's a valued member of this team, and she's present here to participate in this historic conference. Quoting from the preamble to this constitution, the intent of the theme is to, let me quote, invite us to reflect deeply on how the academy can transcend silos of privilege and exclusion, and instead co-create knowledge that is accessible, transformative, and empowering. I'm pleased indeed that the underlying intention of the conference theme is to prompt a thoughtful reflection on how the academy can move beyond entrenched silos of privilege and exclusion and immerse itself in the daily travails of our communities. This framing challenges us to consider with seriousness and humility how our institutions might dismantle barriers, both visible and invisible, that limit full participation in the knowledge creation project. But it also affirms a collective aspiration to co-create knowledge that is not only accessible, but also transformative and empowering for all who engage with it. In doing so, we reaffirm the fundamental purpose of higher education as a public good, one that advances inclusive scholarship, cultivates shared intellectual ownership, and contributes meaningfully to social and economic justice. Ultimately, this theme invites us to reimagine the academic project itself. It calls on us to build collaborative spaces where diverse experiences, epistemologies, and voices can come together to enrich our understanding of the world and generate knowledge that serves humanity. Just allow me to offer an advance apology should any aspects of my presentation challenge prevailing perspectives or cause discomfort. My intention is not to offend, but rather to engage candidly and constructively with the issues before us. I trust that any difficult points raised will be received in the spirit of critical reflection and collective progress. Saying this in the context of the earlier discussion this morning and some of the issues that were raised, just a brief reflection on language. It is important that we remain acutely aware of the language that we use, as it often reveals the assumptions that underpin our thinking and practice. When we use terms like empower or uplift communities, we may unintentionally imply that these communities lack capacity, they lack agency or expertise to act on their own behalf. Such phrasing risks reinforcing hierarchical relationships in which the university positions itself as the primary source of knowledge or capability. We don't empower the communities. We don't uplift them. They have agency. We work with them. Perhaps a more thoughtful and respectful approach requires us to recognize the inherent strengths, wisdom, and resources within communities, and to adopt language that reflects genuine partnership, mutual learning, and shared responsibility. In doing so, we help create an environment where collaboration is grounded on dignity, on reciprocity, and the acknowledgement of community agency. Let me come to the scholarship of engagement. Without attempting to offer any overly narrow or concise definition of the scholarship of engagement, let me indicate that I understand it to encompass intellectually rigorous teaching, research, and creative activities conducted in equitable collaboration with community partners. Yes, teaching. Yes, research. Yes, creative activities undertaken in partnership with communities, where the goals are set together, the methods and outcomes are co-constructed to address societal needs. I'm mentioning this because I want us to move away from this notion that there is this irreconcilable tension between community engagement, teaching, and research. That somehow these are in mortal tension. Not so in my framing of the scholarship of community engagement. It produces knowledge, that is the scholarship of engagement. It produces knowledge and creative work that is publicly disseminated, that is peer-reviewed, and designed to yield benefits for both the academy and the community. It has to be scholarship. It must be peer-reviewed. It must be publicly disseminated. And it must serve both the academy and the community. So this notion that, well, research is prioritized and community engagement is undervalued, and therefore, no, you can actually do research through the scholarship of engagement. Anyway, our point of departure is the understanding that universities are social institutions established to serve a higher purpose, to improve societies, to transform lives, and ultimately to contribute to the betterment of the world. So, as mentioned earlier, universities don't exist in isolation. They're embedded within specific social, economic, cultural, political, and historical contexts, and remain intrinsically connected to the communities that surround them. As such, they cannot afford to be indifferent to the daily struggles and hardships and lived realities of those communities. Indeed, universities both shape and are shaped by the environments in which they operate. So this underscores the dynamic and reciprocal relationship between the institution and its broader sociocultural milieu. Consequently, universities cannot function as ivory towers, detached, disinterested, or removed from societal concerns. They must be firmly grounded in and deeply engaged with their immediate communities in service of the public good. It is in this recognition that we crafted our vision statement as Rhodes University, that we aspire to be foremost in the creation and advancement of locally responsive and globally engaged knowledge that seeks to create a just and sustainable society. Locally responsive, first thing, we are knowledge institutions. We aren't anything else. We are knowledge institutions. So we aspire to generate and advance knowledge. What kind of knowledge? That which is locally responsive and globally engaged. You don't want to be parochial. You want to generate knowledge that seeks to address the local context and still contribute to the global stock of knowledge and enrich the entire global stock of knowledge from your position of strength. For what purpose? To create a just and sustainable society. To reemphasize the point made earlier by Professor Francis, if universities operate in isolation from people around them, they cease to be engines of progress. Instead, they become grand structures with fading relevance, admired from outside, but hollow in their impact. Universities and communities must work together to co-create solutions that are responsive to the needs and aspirations of the community. In this regard, it is important to emphasize the knowledge-driven aspect in this partnership. Universities are not charitable organizations. They are fundamentally institutions of knowledge. That is really important. They are institutions of knowledge. Their greatest contribution to surrounding communities lies in their ability to generate, apply, and share knowledge in ways that are meaningful, relevant, and transformative. You see, at its most powerful, knowledge realizes its full potential when it contributes to the transformation of lives. Knowledge is more than the accumulation of information. It is the capacity to inspire critical thinking, enable personal growth, and drive positive societal change. Its true value lies in its ability to expand opportunities, to shape futures, and help individuals navigate our increasingly complex world with agency and purpose. So, as universities, we must remain committed to producing and disseminating knowledge that promotes meaningful and positive change in the lives of individuals in our society at large. So through research, universities should work collaboratively. So as academics and researchers, we must engage with communities, not in or on them, but we must engage with them. We must not do research on them. We must do research with them. Academics bring scholarly expertise, but they must also recognize and learn from the rich knowledge and wisdom that reside within communities. This is a point which was made by Margie earlier on. Sometimes we think that universities are the only places of knowledge. No. There is vast knowledge and wisdom that resides in our communities. Knowledge and wisdom which have been passed from generation to generation. We must learn from that rich knowledge. But such engagement demands humility, acknowledging that researchers do not possess all the answers to the challenges experienced by communities. We do not have all answers that can address the problems faced by our communities. So it is through reciprocal sharing of ideas and expertise that effective, relevant, and sustainable solutions can be co-created. Again, this for me is really important. Communities themselves possess agency and have much to contribute. They should not be regarded as passive recipients of university interventions, but as active participants in shaping the solutions that affect their lives and futures. Through meaningful community engagement, university staff and students are challenged to look beyond disciplinary boundaries, appreciate diverse perspectives, and recognize the complexity, richness, and the dignity of human experience. In turn, communities gain a deeper appreciation of the university's role and are more likely to regard it as a trusted partner in advancing the public good. As we all know, community engagement occupies a vital space at the intersection of theory and practice. It provides a powerful avenue through which academic insights and research findings can be translated into tangible actions that address the real challenges faced by people. In this way, community engagement bridges the divide between conceptual knowledge and practical application, ensuring that scholarly work contributes meaningfully to societal advancement. Look, despite the formal recognition of community engagement in policy frameworks such as the White Paper 3, conceptual ambiguity regarding its meaning and scope persists. Of course, one of the perennial questions that is, who constitutes the community? Who is the community? A related conceptual issue concerns the positioning of community engagement relative to teaching and research within the university's mission. I've touched on this already, but I'll touch on it further down. A widely accepted view holds that community engagement constitutes the third pillar of the university's core mandate, complementing teaching, learning, and research. And this position affirms that engagement is not peripheral, but integral, enriching academic work by grounding it in real-world concerns. From time to time, I do challenge this idea of pillars, because sometimes you can think of a pillar as something that is rigid. You have three pillars. You have community engagement, you have research, and you have teaching and learning. But one has to look at this in a much more expansive way. Community engagement influences and is influenced by research. Community engagement influences and is influenced by teaching and learning. Research influences and is influenced by teaching and learning. That kind of an ecosystem where the three influence each other is for me very important. So, community engagement complements teaching and learning and research. It is not peripheral. It is not an add-on. It is very much part of the whole. By situating community engagement alongside teaching and research, universities demonstrate their commitment to producing knowledge that is socially responsive, pedagogically relevant, and aligned to the public good. Accordingly, community engagement cannot function in isolation from teaching and research. You can't just have community engagement on its own, independent from teaching and learning and research. Its legitimacy and impact arise from its integration within these core functions. When linked to teaching, engagement deepens curriculum relevance through, among other things, experiential, and context-based learning. When integrated into research, community engagement ensures that scholarly inquiry remains socially relevant, ethically responsible, and attuned to the needs of communities. In this sense, it operates, if you like, as a connective tissue, uniting knowledge production, knowledge dissemination, and societal impact. Well, that notwithstanding, many academics tend to perceive community engagement as under-recognized and undervalued relative to teaching and research. And we heard that this morning. Publish or perish. But you see, that conception of public or perish is understood in the context of research as though research is something completely unconnected to community engagement. You can publish. You can undertake the scholarship of community engagement and publish in peer-reviewed journals. So this dichotomy that is imagined is not there. Despite its significant contributions, community engagement is often regarded as secondary to the core academic mission. And this perceived marginalization can discourage meaningful participation and hinder the embedding of engagement within academic practice. So addressing this perception of marginalization requires deliberate institutional action to affirm the value of engagement and provide appropriate recognition and support. Closely related to the issue of being undervalued and unrecognized nature of community engagement, we hear academics complaining all the time about workload. Many academics report that the combined pressures of teaching, research, and administration and supervision leave insufficient time for meaningful engagement activities. That emanates from the particular conception of community engagement, that it is just one other thing. If you embarked on community engagement activities, you would be adding on your many responsibilities, which is not the case. Another prevailing view, and I know that some people will slaughter me here, is that in the absence of dedicated funding from government or institutions, community engagement is rendered negligible or inconsequential. I accept that without earmarked resources, engagement risks being perceived as optional rather than integral. Of course, we know that there's funding available for teaching and learning. We know that there's funding available for research. There is no dedicated or earmarked budget for community engagement. And to that extent, people say, well, it is inconsequential. I think that is a fallacious conception of community engagement. But it does highlight the importance of intentional, sustained investment to signal institutional commitment, enable impactful strategic partnerships. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have dedicated budgets. But I refuse to believe that simply because there isn't such, then community engagement is inconsequential. Because my view is that rather than approaching situations from a deficit mindset, we must recognize the strengths, resources, and capabilities already available. By acknowledging and leveraging what you have, you can make more strategic decisions, build confidence, and create a stronger foundation for sustainable progress. We should move away from this deficit mindset. And same with communities. We shouldn't just approach them with a view that they are deficient. Here we are, we come all with all that they need to get better. So the deficit mindset is a huge barrier, even with acknowledging the fact that there is no dedicated budget. Look at whatever resources you have and build on that. Community engagement activities such as service learning, community-based research, and student volunteerism offer students invaluable experiential learning opportunities. And these activities immerse students in the realities of social challenges, allowing them to apply theoretical knowledge in authentic contexts and to develop empathy, critical thinking, and a strong sense of social responsibility. Colleagues, community-engaged research is hard work. It is hard work requiring substantial investments in time, requiring patience, openness, and trust building. But the relationships formed and the shared impact achieved make the work meaningful and fulfilling. It's unlike writing a paper on a topic in chemistry. You can conduct an experiment and, you know, within a reasonable space of time, you collect your results and you write a paper. Community-engaged research is hard and it's time-consuming, but it is very, very fulfilling. We must remain conscious, and I think this point was made earlier on, we must remain conscious of the power asymmetries that often characterize university-community relationships. The perceived imbalance between students or researchers and community members can inhibit open participation and meaningful collaboration, as community partners may feel undervalued and they may also feel intimidated. And when these power dynamics are acknowledged and deliberately addressed through respectful, reciprocal, and co-creative practices, university-community partnerships can flourish. Under such conditions, collaborations can generate new and innovative forms of knowledge that integrate academic and local insights, enriching research, enhancing teaching, and delivering more sustainable and socially responsive outcomes. I do not draw any distinction between research, teaching and learning, and community engagement. That for me is important. Despite the many challenges that continue to affect community engagement, it is important to recognize the substantial progress that has been made over the years. Our collective efforts across teaching, research, and partnership building have steadily strengthened the reach, quality, and impact of our engagement initiatives. However, much work remains. We must continue to advance community engagement by grounding it more firmly in rigorous scholarship. This requires systemic inquiry robust theoretical framing, critical reflection, and the generation of evidence that deepens our understanding of what meaningful, ethical, and sustainable engagement entails. In this respect, the current conference assumes particular significance. It provides a vital platform for scholars, for practitioners, and community partners to interrogate existing practices, share emerging insights, and strengthen the academic foundations of community engagement. Through such collaborative intellectual work, we can continue to elevate this field and ensure that engagement is recognized and valued as an essential dimension of the university scholarly mission. Allow me to conclude by underscoring an important and perhaps self-evident point. The successful and sustainable institutionalization of community engagement requires a profound, deliberate shift in mindset across all levels of the university. This entails re-examining long-held assumptions about the role of the academy, embracing a culture that values reciprocal partnerships with communities, and fostering an environment in which engagement is recognized as integral to our core academic mission. Only when this attitudinal transformation occurs from the leadership of our universities, through academic staff, professional and support staff, and students, can community engagement become a deeply embedded, coherent, and impactful institutional practice. I thank you. Where's the? Oh, I didn't see the red.
You didn't see you finished on time.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. Prof, it was so enlightening. Just before the lunch, Prof Msomi was talking about you, that you are just a source of knowledge. And I could relate that what he was saying. And you started with, you allowed us to doze off, but you did not allow us to doze off. But I'm quite happy that it reminded me of my VC. She always used to say, if you are sleeping, you are not doing the work. She always tells us. So we can't doze off while you are still here. So thank you so much for your key address. I would like to take a few minutes for the engagement with Prof. Mabizela. If there is any questions, burning questions or any reflections that from the audience, if you wanted to raise, you may raise, please, one or two questions because of the time. Colleagues, if you have any questions. Oh, so that means we have had good knowledge, so we don't have any questions. Thank you. All right. Okay. Prof has one question. Sorry.
Thank you so much, Professor Mabizela, for such a thought-provoking presentation. The question that I always get is, who owns the university? Is it the chancellor? Is it the council? Is it the vice chancellor? Your views on this one. Is it the community? If it's the community, tell me it, if ever you could explain to us in what sense. Thank you.
There's one more question.
It's very much difficult to pose a question after such a heated, insightful, progressive presentation. Prof, you humble us. I'm not sure whether it's your humility or is your preparedness when you come and present to us. As champions of community engagement, we're expecting to punch holes into your presentation so that we can derive the juice that we want to bring, not only to your kind self, but to all vice chancellors in higher education sector. It is a thorny issue that such a critical mandate called community engagement becomes more acceptable if it is not funded. Especially coming from us who feel the pinch on the ground. Contextualized by communities that we are serving, truth be told, that we are serving very impoverished communities. And I will take an example of Rhodes being a premium or one of the leaders or anchors in community engagement and the changes that you have impacted to that community. In today's age and era, universities have become a contested space of local businesses. We have seen the incident at Fort Hare. We have seen Walter Sisulu. Maybe with other universities that are experiencing the same challenges. The question that I will pose to you, kindly give me the highlights or give us the highlights on how you have progressed in this unfunded mandate, which is often referred as a third pillar. To me, this is a pillar that is anchoring, because universities are meant or are developed to change the material conditions of societies they are serving. And if research, teaching, and learning will be put in the forefront at the detriment of community engagement as a supplementary mandate of the two, and we underscoring the relevance of community engagement, because to me that is the priority and the fundamental, if I might say, objective of universities. So I'm challenging everyone to change how we view community engagement, not as a supplement, but as a forerunner in as far as the change is concerned. You have highlighted, we have simplified community engagement, but there are barriers and challenges that we are faced as ground troopers or as drivers of this difficult mandate. How have you done it at Rhodes University? Thank you.
Thank you very much. My sister, who owns the university? The university is communally owned. It is owned by every citizen of this country. It is owned by the community in which that institution is physically located. And the community does not need any excuse in calling on the university expertise and resources to address the challenges that it faces. But more broadly, as I indicated, higher education institutions exist for a higher purpose: to transform lives, to transform societies, and to transform humanity. So, what that means is we should not take it as some kind of a favor if we get immersed in the challenges and the hardships and the struggles of the communities of which we are part. We have a responsibility. More than that, we have had the privilege of higher education. But that education is not solely for your own benefit. It is for the benefit of the broader community. It is for the benefit of humanity. And therefore, I'm quite clear in my mind that we have a particular responsibility. Remember, those to whom much is given, much is expected. And so we have to discharge that responsibility and ensure that we create conditions for ordinary people to realize their full potential. Read the constitution of this country in its preamble. It commits us to freeing the potential of every citizen. As institutions of higher learning, one very important way in which you can fulfill that is through educating our students in a manner that produces well-educated, well-rounded, ethical, and engaged citizens who can give back to their communities. And more than that, in terms of research, we have to do research that advances the same objective. The issue of funding, and I know that this is a very sensitive issue for people involved in community engagement. I've had it said many more times than you can imagine that this is an unfunded mandate. I accept it is an unfunded mandate, and that I don't dispute the fact that we need funding. We need funding for community engagement. But I don't suggest that it has to somehow be different from research and teaching and learning. We do need funding, and this is why I mentioned the importance of leadership, which hopefully answers you, my friend. Leadership. From the office of the Vice Chancellor, a Vice Chancellor leading by example and leading community engagement. I've been very fortunate in that I've never hesitated to lead from the front when it comes to community engagement, to support the team that is involved in community engagement. When I became the Vice Chancellor, I made a declaration that Rhodes University was not just physically in Makanda, that it was off and for Makanda. And that helped a great deal to reorient people's seeing of the university and the community. And so I do go out to the community. I do interact with them, and I support my team. Yes, we need funding. We do provide them, we do provide community engagement with a grant which is not much. But
Their work needs to be supported. And that is why I emphasize this idea of ensuring that you take a much more integrated approach to the three co-functions of the university, which I don't see as distinguishable: research, teaching and learning, and community engagement. Again, I'm not suggesting in any way or form that you don't need funding. But I do want to suggest that when it comes to research, let us engage in the scholarship of community engagement and place this very important endeavor on a rigorous theoretical footing so that we can produce papers. But not only that, that the work that we do in community engagement also has a positive impact on the communities that we work with. There's no simple answer. But until we acknowledge the importance of universities and communities and that we reorient them so that they fulfill that responsibility, we will just become monuments of irrelevance. Okay, thank you. Just one thing, I should have commented on the issue of Forte and Walter Sisulu that you mentioned. What happened at Forte is a tragedy of epic proportions. It's a shameful thing, and sadly, it happens too often in our communities, where we burn and destroy infrastructure that is meant to serve us. We burn clinics, we burn schools, and we burn universities. Facilities and infrastructure meant for the benefit of the black child. How then do you free the creative genius of a black child when you destroy facilities that are intended to produce these young people? Give them I'm proud because I studied at Forte. And I could not have gone to any white university when I was ready to go to university. I couldn't. I needed to get a ministerial permit in Pretoria, and I could only get one if I wanted to study something that was not offered in any of the black universities. So if we don't look after our institutions, we are only hiding to nothing. It's the tragedy of the worst proportions. Same thing at Walter Sisulu. Somehow we need to do something. We need to do something to protect infrastructure, to respect that which is for the benefit of all. Thank you.
Professor Mabizela, you touched on the matter that I was going to make reference to. I'm making a follow-up on the question that I asked, who owns the university? And your response was that the community owns the university. Now, given the latest developments at the University of Forte, at Walter Sisulu University, at the University of Free State, as institutions of higher learning, how do we begin to involve the communities? If communities own these universities that are bent down by the kids that belong to the university, Universities are destroyed by the politicians, because government has failed to protect the universities that they have oversight on. So if communities own universities as institutions of higher learning, how do we engage with the community? How do we encourage the community to do the right thing of protecting the institutions that they own? Thank you.
Right. My sister, the question you are raising has to be understood in a much broader context. And there are things that we really need to reflect on very deeply. The use of violence as a legitimate form of expressing discontent is something that we really need to address. And over and above the acknowledgement that these institutions belong to the public, there's something deeply troubling about our society. We are an extremely violent society. And that violence manifests itself in destroying property. It manifests itself in the brutal and violent violation of women and children. Rape being seen as something that is acceptable in a way, we don't do enough to rid ourselves of the scourge of violence. When someone stops in the street, wants to steal your cell phone, they will not just take your cell phone. They will shoot and kill you. And then you ask, but why? Why are we such a violent society? And so that violence in the society does manifest itself in institutions of higher learning in the manner as we have seen at Forte. I really don't understand the amount of provocation and the lack of responsiveness on the part of the university leadership that would justify burning buildings to the cost of about R500 million. So it's something that perhaps sociologists and psychologists can help us understand. Why are we such a violent society? And why do we legitimate, why do we accept violence as a legitimate form of expressing our frustration and discontent? I know this was part of some of the things that happened in the 80s, those who were around in the 80s when we had things like neck lacing, and some of us witnessed those things firsthand. It may well be latent violence which we had then, but it's difficult to understand when the young people who were born and raised post-1994, resorting to violence and as a form of expressing their discontent. So yes, communities must take ownership of the public institutions. And if they don't protect those, they will be destroyed and we will all lose out. Yeah. I'm sorry to end on such a morbid note, but it's one of those things that trouble me deeply, particularly in universities when you have incidents of gender-based violence and rape. When universities, and of course there's always this argument that universities are, you know, a part of the of society, and young people who are at universities are the best this country has, and they have to model the best that a person can be. So this notion that, well, the social ills have to manifest themselves in our universities because we are a microcosm of the society, I don't subscribe to that. I would like universities to model the best that our society can be, because these are people who will occupy important positions. Thank you.
Thank you, Prof. It was a very intense discussion, and I'm pretty much sure we all learned. Prof. Sibia, our Vice Chancellor, I request you to present a token of appreciation to our guest.
Thank you
so much, Prof. Thank you so much, Prof. Sibia. Now we come to the end of my session. The next sessions are the workshop, which is going to take place in suite number 4.
And this is an MUT Radio podcast.